The hour of 8:15 having arrived, I am calling the House Committee, the House Commerce Committee to order. There is a quorum present, and our first order of business is approval of the meeting minutes. Co-Vice Chair Perryman, have you had a chance to review the meeting minutes from March 27th, 2025?
I have reviewed the minutes, Leader, and I approve them. I'm so moved to approve them.
Thank you so much. Any discussion on the March 27th, 2025 meeting minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Any opposed, nay? The motion prevails, and the minutes from March 27, 2025 are approved. All right. Our first bill up today is Representative Ryer's bill, House File 2543. Representative Ryer moves House File 2543 be placed on the general register. Representative Ryer, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, committee, and thank you, co-chairs Hur and O'Driscoll. Here we passed legislation that modernized and improved Minnesota's garnishment processes. Because processes changed, the required forms also needed to change, and the revised forms are presented in House File 2543. So hard to understand forms are one of the most pervasive annoyances we all face. They can also have serious consequences if people make mistakes on them when stakes are high. For example, when they're dealing with financial problems that led to garnishment. So while we made the necessary content changes, we also took the opportunity to improve the usability by incorporating principles of plain language into the revision process. House File 2543 brings forward the results of this work. As required, the Attorney General's Office led a process with stakeholders from across the garnishment process, the courts, attorneys, banks, employers, consumers, and advocacy groups. The core team included a specialist in plain language. So three types of content changes were needed: updating exemptions, updating definitions, and incorporating the new wage garnishment tiers. Once this was done, plain language revisions were made. With consideration to simplified language and clearer layout and organization. And then finally, the subject matter experts signed off on the forms, confirming that the content of the forms was unchanged. And you'll see a letter to this effect in your packet. So here is an example of language simplification. On page 4, lines 420 to 426, the original version reads, after receipt of this notice, you in bad faith take action to frustrate the execution levy, thus requiring the judgment creditor to petition the court to resolve the problem. You will be liable to the judgment creditor for costs and reasonable attorney's fees plus an amount not to exceed $100. The revised version. If you get this notice, then do something in bad faith to try and block or stop the levy, and the creditor has to take you to court because of it, you will have to pay the creditor's costs and reasonable lawyer's fees and a fine up to $100. There's an example of layout on page 2. 229 to 232 has a list of about 10 items complete with acronyms just jammed together. It's really hard to read. In the new version, it just simply takes it, bullets it out so that it's much more easy to understand, more readable, and more useful for the people who are using the material. So I'm hoping that changes like these will make a stressful situation for consumers a little easier, and I ask for your support. And Mr. Weber and Mr. Hartz are here for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Are there any members who are present today who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, and that was members of the public, my apologies, and we'll move to member questions. Members, any questions for Representative Ryer? All right, Representative Ryer, you did such a wonderful job. There are no questions for you. Do you have any closing comments before we take action on your bill?
I appreciate the support to move it forward. I think the changes speak for themselves, and I would like to see us do more plain language work across branches of government. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Representative Ryer renews the motion that House File 2543 be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. House File 2524 is placed on the general register. Our next bill, 2543.
Yeah.
I'm just make sure I say that correctly. House File 2543 is placed on the General Register. Our next bill is another Ryer bill, which is House File 2566. And as your testifiers are coming to the table, I'm going to move your bill, Representative Ryer. So we move House File 2566 be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Ryer, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Herr, Chair O'Driscoll, and members. House File 2566, the Minnesota Business Filing Fraud Prevention Act, is an important step in protecting Minnesotans from business identity fraud. Bad actors can hijack a legitimate business or create a fake one in someone else's name, the person often chosen by chance with no connection to the perpetrator. Victims often don't realize what's happened until they're facing bills, legal trouble, or tax liabilities for a business they never owned or for actions their actual business did not take. The Office of Minnesota Secretary of State handles phone calls daily from Minnesotans who are suddenly dealing with this crime without a clear answer why and how to clear their name. The problem is the office lacks the statutory ability to help beyond aiding law enforcement who may investigate. Article 1 of this bill creates a clear process for handling fraudulent filings, making it easier to correct your record and unwind the damage. It's nearly impossible to pass laws at the speed that criminals can abuse the system, so having a direct path to challenge and remove wrongful filings ensures that victims can reclaim their businesses and identities without long delays and costly legal representation. Article 2 seeks to address another common issue. The office receives calls from business owners across the state about solicitations that offer to complete operating requirements for a fee. The office has seen examples of solicitations that look nearly identical to and could very easily be mistaken for official communications. These deceptive solicitations can easily convince business owners to pay for a service that they could easily do for free or at a lower cost on the office's website. I'll now turn it over to Ms. Bethke, Deputy General Counsel at the Office of the Secretary of State, to provide more detail about the process laid out in the bill. Thank you.
Ms. Bethke, please identify yourself for the record and begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair Herr, O'Driscoll.
Could you just pull your microphone a little closer to you? Thank you.
Is that better? Yeah. Right. Good morning, Chair Herr, O'Driscoll, and members of the committee. My name is Lauren Bethke, and I'm the Deputy General Counsel for the Secretary of State. We've been working on these concepts for a couple of years and consulting with different states and stakeholders. We're really pleased with the shape the bill has taken, and I think there are a few letters of support in your packets. So thank you very much to Representative Ryer for carrying the bill and to the committee for hearing the bill today. I will start by going through the process at a fairly high level, but happy to take questions afterwards or go into more detail. So right now, our office does not have the authority to remove a fraudulent business filing unless someone goes to court and gets a court order. So this bill essentially creates a process that allows us to do that after going through some steps to ensure due process. The first step is that a person would contact our office and make a declaration of wrongful filing. So they will explain, you know, this is who I am, this is the filing that's at issue, these are the reasons that I believe it was filed wrongfully. Our staff would then review that declaration and give notice to the complainant, which is the person who filed the declaration, and also the filer, which is the person who made the original filing that's at issue. The notice would describe the complaint and explain the process and the timelines. Once that notice is given, the filer has 21 calendar days to respond. If they don't respond, we would presume that filing is fraudulent and issue an order. I'll talk a little bit later about how that works, the next steps in that case, but that's the first notice and opportunity to respond. If the filer does respond, we would take a look at their response and make a preliminary determination of whether the filing is fraudulent or not. And then we would give notice of that preliminary determination, and the non-prevailing party would have 10 days to respond. If they don't respond, the preliminary determination becomes final. And if they do respond, we would again consider any additional information they have provided and make a final determination. If our staff ultimately determines that a filing is fraudulent, we would issue a final order explaining the rationale for this decision. We would also mark the filing as fraudulent or unauthorized in the business filings database, and we would redact any names or personal information that was used without authorization. If our staff determines that a filing is not fraudulent or if there's not enough information to make a decision, we would issue a final order explaining that rationale, and then, of course, in that case, the filing would stay in place in the database. In either situation, the non-prevailing party could appeal the order in district court, so there is an option for judicial review of our office's decision. So that's the overall process for Article 1. Article 2 addresses another problem, which is deceptive business mailings. We've found that there are folks out there sending solicitations to businesses and saying, you know, you need to make this filing and pay us a fee to make the filing for you. We certainly have no objection to a business making a service available for a fee, but the issue is that those solicitations often look so similar to communications from our office that it's very easy to mistake that for an official requirement. And so people will end up responding to that solicitation and then paying a fee for something they could do themselves on our website. So this section has just some requirements for these solicitations, just to make clear that it's an advertisement for a service and not an official government communication. Article 3 just has a few conforming changes to add cross-references. So that's a fast overview, but I'm happy to take questions, and we have some other folks from our office here as well.
Thank you for the testimony. Do any members of the public wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Members, any questions for Representative Ryer or her testifier? Wow, seeing that's two in a row, Representative Ryer. Representative O'Driscoll, any comments on this before I go? All right. Representative Ryer, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, thank you. I appreciate the support to move this along and appreciate your time.
Thank you. Representative Rye renews the motion that House File 2543 be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Policy Committee. All those in I will restate that. Representative Rye renews the motion that House File 2566 be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. House File 2566 is re-referred to the State Government Finance and Policy Committee. The next bill on our agenda today is a Representative Hewitt bill. And this is an informational hearing on policy provisions from the Minnesota Department of Health. There's no motion for this bill today. And so we will wait for Representative Hewitt to get there.
I hate those.
Lisa, take them.
Oh, Health Department of Fish.
Well, thank you. They look great.
Yep.
Trying to buy us off.
No.
Not only her. Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and members, thank you for hearing our bill today. Hewitt's here, so it's an agency bill. Basically, this is some update changes that the department needed to move forward with a few areas. One I think we'll all be in favor of, so we don't get any more mail in the mailbox, is the explanation of benefits electronically. So basically what they're saying is those forms we get after we go to the doctor, they come to us and tell us how much is going to be paid and not going to be paid. You can receive these. What this bill will allow us to do is let you receive them electronically instead of going to your mailbox all the time. The default will be to mail them if they don't answer. But this is really, to me, this is excellent because I have a number of those sitting in my house right now. The other part of the bill is network adequacy, federal conformity. This section updates Minnesota's network adequacy standards to match the federal for the state-based healthcare exchange by January 1st of 26. Currently, state rules are broader, and while federal standards set time and distance criteria by service type and county, the classification, the update adopts federal county designations such as larger metro and rural and requires health plans to justify unmet standards with their detailed data. These changes ensure compliance, improve access based on location, and promote equity in healthcare statewide. Also, the feds are knocking at the door on this one, so we want to get going on it. The third one here is prescription pricing transparency updates and technical fixes. This proposal updates the Prescription Drug Price Transparency Act in Section 340B, covering the entity report to improve clarity and compliance. It refines the protection, key changes, and enhances oversight, corrects statutory reference for exemptions and extensions, and streamlines the process. The updates strengthen data collection, supports affordability, and reinforces Minnesota's leadership in drug pricing transparency. The 340B, the Drug Pricing Program, is a U.S. federal government program created in 1992 that requires drug manufacturers to provide outpatient drug eligibility healthcare organizations and covers entities that significantly reduces prices. The last part is basically an updated regulation to HMOs. This proposal modernizes HMOs to align with insurance practice and closes regulatory gaps. It applies national standards, including, this is a word that you're going to have to ask Lisa about what this one means, NAIC Holding Company and Risk Management Acts, expanding oversight through broader examination and improving data collection and requiring solvency assessments. These updates ensure consistency with the federal model and strengthen Minnesota's regulatory framework and enhances consumer protection in a complex market. Madam Chair, to you.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt, I see that you have a testifier here, and if you could identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, Madam Chair, Co-Chair O'Driscoll, Lisa Timian. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Health. I don't have any further comments, but I'm happy to help with questions for members.
All right. Any member questions? It's really long. Member questions. Boy, everybody is very sleepy this morning, it would seem, huh? No member questions. All right. Well, great job, Representative Hewitt. Any other comments before we release you from the table up there?
And apparently this will be voted on in health tomorrow. So thank you. The muffins worked. I'll take that for any future bills I do. Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Our last bill up for today, we are just moving through this today. Thank you all. our last bill is a Representative Norris bill. It's House File 2627. Oh, he is not here yet. We moved so fast, Representative Norris is not here. All right, we are actually texting Rep. Norris right now. He's just across the hall, and so I'm just going to recess us until Representative Norris is able to make it over here. So we, our committee stands in recess. I don't want one. Good. Hewitt brought them. Okay, I call this committee back to order. Representative Norris, thank you for joining our committee today. I will move that House File 2627 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Norris, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Herr, and sorry to keep the committee waiting. I got to commend you for running an efficient committee this morning. This bipartisan bill, House File 2627, is designed to protect consumers and prevent animal cruelty while avoiding shuttering anyone's business. For years, the pet store industry has trended away from selling live cats and dogs. Advocates have expressed concern about the welfare of animals sold through the few remaining stores that engage in this practice. This bill begins the process of ending these sales in our state by prohibiting any stores that don't currently sell dogs or cats from doing so. Importantly, this bill represents a compromise that grandfathers in the stores that currently engage in this practice. These stores will be able to continue selling dogs or cats while owned by the current owner, as long as they provide transparency about where they are sourcing their dogs and cats from. This compromise ensures that no one loses their living or retirement plan while ensuring these animals are sourced responsibly. And with that, Chair Herr, I would like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Norris. Our first testifier is Aaron Zellhofer. Please identify yourself for the record and begin.
Good morning, Representative and Chair Herr and O'Driscoll and committee members. My name is Aaron Zellhofer, and I am the Minnesota State Director for Humane World for Animals. House File 2627 is a compromise legislation that prevents any additional pet shops from selling puppies while allowing existing stores to do so as long as they adhere to common sense sourcing and transparency requirements. We are lucky here in Minnesota to only have three puppy selling pet stores, but there is currently nothing stopping more from moving into our state, especially those bad actors who no longer are allowed to sell puppies due to humane pet shop laws. Puppy selling pet stores prevent a ton of problems for animals and consumers, from cruel puppy selling mills they source from, to deceptive sales tactics, to sick puppy sales and predatory lending. Allowing existing pet shops to keep selling puppies is a major concession for animal welfare advocates and consumer protection advocates, but we respect the request from legislators to carve out existing businesses. Some guardrails in this bill exist for stores include only sourcing from licensed breeders and disclosing who those breeders are. It is hard to imagine how anyone could oppose these requirements. These stores can still sell from large-scale commercial breeders. They just have to be honest about it. To fight these regulations is to admit that deception is a key part of the problem. Public records show that Minnesota pet store mills are terrible animal welfare violations, including those that have racked up a ton of citations. I'm happy to provide those records upon request. I see I'm at my 2 minutes, so thank you for allowing me to testify, and please support House File 2627, and I'm here to answer any questions that may come up.
Thank you, Mr. Zellhofer. Our next testifier is Megan Helling. Please identify yourself for the record and begin.
Hi, Chair Herr, Chair O'Driscoll, and members. My name is Megan Helling, and I'm here today as a consumer. The day my husband and I bought Monty a yellow lab from a metro area pet store that's still operating today, my life changed. How would buying a puppy change my life? It opened my eyes to the cruel reality of large-scale dog breeding and the harm it inflicts not only in the dogs trapped in these systems, but also on families who bring them home, unaware of the suffering behind the sale. Monty's story: as a puppy, he was unable to go for walks longer than a few blocks without lying down. We later learned this was due to early onset hip dysplasia. Within 6 months, he began having seizures. Monty endured a lifetime of medical challenges requiring pain management, a hip replacement, a knee replacement, hydrotherapy, stem cell therapy, with a cost of over $20,000. This could have been prevented if we had known the truth about where he had come from. I didn't understand how an AKC-registered dog with paperwork that looked so official could have so many issues. This led me to dig deeper into where Monty had come from. And what I found was disheartening. Monty was born in a South Dakota breeding operation, sold to a broker in Iowa, then sold to a Minnesota pet store. This system hides the origins of these puppies, allowing stores to deceive customers. Monty has been the driving force behind my advocacy on this issue for years. While House File 2627 does not ban the sale of puppies in existing pet stores, a painful compromise, it ensures that no new pet stores in Minnesota will support the puppy mill industry. Also, it paves the way for the gradual elimination of puppies being sold in pet stores in our state, bringing us closer to a future where no dogs suffer for profit. Please support this bill as it sends a clear message that Minnesota values compassion over profit and protects consumers from those who would deceive them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Helling. Our next testifier is Michael Swanson. And after that is Lauren Kelmet. If maybe the two of you could just go up to the testifier's table. Mr. Swanson, please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Dear members of the House of Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee, my name is Michael Swanson. I'm a single father of two children whom I care for full-time. I'm the owner of Four Paws and a Tail, a small locally owned pet store that has been part of the Minnesota community for over 56 years. I'm writing to respectfully urge you to oppose HF 2627, a bill that puts my business, my family, and my employees' livelihoods at serious risk. Four Paws and a Tail is the last pet store, one of the last pet stores in the metro area that offers puppies. We're a family-run business that has helped generations of Minnesotans find the right pet. We provide a safe, welcoming environment where new pet parents can visit, ask questions, and receive guidance on choosing the right puppy. Every puppy we place comes with a free first exam offered by our local veterinarian clinic, a health guarantee of full transparency about the puppy's origin. We comply with Minnesota animals' welfare laws and pride ourselves in setting the standard for ethical and responsible pet placement. We build strong relationships with reputable breeders and ensure every customer knows exactly where their pet came from. While HF 2627 includes a grandfather clause, it is not a true protection. Under Section 4D, I would be prohibited from locating my store for any reason and unable to sell or transfer ownership of the business, even to a family member. This would turn my business into an unmovable, unsaleable asset. It's not a path forward. It's a countdown to closure. The bill also proposes new requirements around advertising, including publicly listing breeder license numbers. Many breeders live on the same property where they raise their dogs, and making that information publicly available could expose them to harassment by activists. This requirement also adds unnecessary paperwork without delivering meaningful animal welfare benefits and may lead some consumers to bypass regulated sources entirely. Activist groups have made it clear they are targeting my store regardless of the care, transparency, and service we provide. I ask you to consider the real-world consequences of this bill, not just for me, but for the employees, customers, and animals who depend on a responsible pet care community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Up next is Lauren Kelmet. If you can identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Lauren Kelmet. I'm here on behalf of the Pet Advocacy Network, the voice of the responsible pet care community. We urge you to oppose House File 2627, which would ban the retail sale of dogs and cats in Minnesota pet stores. While the intent of this bill may be to protect animals, in practice, bans like this do the opposite. We've already seen what happens when retail pet sales are outlawed. Underground markets emerge. Puppies are sold out of parking lots, online classifieds, and unregulated channels, often with no health guarantees, no consumer protections, no oversight. Families are left vulnerable, animals suffer, and the most transparent and accountable sources of pets, licensed pet stores, are eliminated. Meanwhile, the bad actors the law is intended to restrict continue to operate in the shadows. This bill removes oversight, not abuse, and it punishes responsible businesses who are committed to doing things the right way. Please don't replace regulation with chaos. We urge you to oppose House File 2627.
Thank you, Ms. Kelmet. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will move to member questions. The first person I have is Representative Katiza Watum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Norris, for carrying this bill. It's something that I've worked on in the past. We've worked on together. My district, my city of Eden Prairie, already has a animal sale ban in place for many, many years now. And I guess I just, this is different from the bill that we've brought forward in the past, and I'm hoping that, you know, you can maybe shed a little light on some of the testifiers' comments about how difficult this would make for them to be in business compared to what some of the regulations already are in terms of transparency. If they're already running a clean business, not operating with puppy mills and other sorts of shadowy organizations, is it just an additional step of paperwork? Can you just give us a little bit more background on how it would work in practice?
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Herr, and thank you, Representative Katitsa Watoon, for your leadership on this issue, your partnership on this issue, and for the question. I have taken a lot of time listening to the folks on both sides of this issue. I've had an opportunity to visit Mr. Swanson at his store, listen to his concerns, and I think this bill, as you noted, is different from the versions that have been brought before because it represents a compromise. It allows those stores that are currently in operation selling dogs or cats to continue to do so because, you know, I take Mr. Swanson at his word that he is sourcing his pets responsibly. But I think the fair thing to do in that is to provide the transparency so that the public and others, including the customers, policymakers, can verify that these dogs and cats are being sourced responsibly. So what this bill would do would require that the breeder is disclosed so that then anyone can go look up the records and make sure that this is a responsible breeder. So it adds sunlight. It's not shutting down anybody's business. It just simply adds additional sunlight so that we can have the confidence that there are animal protections in place and consumer protections in place in our state.
And before I go to follow up, Representative Katitsa Watoon, can I just ask Mr. Swanson and Ms. Kelmet to maybe step down from the testifiers table? I know, I think Mr. Zell Hoffer, if you want to go back up there. Representative Katitsa Watoon, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, just briefly, Madam Chair. I appreciate that further explanation, Representative Norris. I think that it's helpful just in terms of the context, because we know that so few pet stores are already operating across the state. So while this, you know, would make a difference in business practice for these organizations that are currently in business, it does seem like a reasonable compromise to me. You know, and there's a lot of money that goes into rescuing cats and dogs from a variety of different places, like through the puppy mill chain. You know, our first dog came to us almost 10 years ago. He's since passed, but he came from a puppy mill in Missouri. He came to us with heartworm. And, you know, we were in a place where we could afford those treatments, but many families don't anticipate that sort of expense after they bring an animal into their family. And so it just makes it really difficult, I think. And so just having an extra set of protections and transparency for the public to make sure that they are doing business with people that are doing business responsibly, I think is a really great step in the right direction.
Thank you.
Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Representative Norris, for bringing this bill forward. My concern isn't about the pet stores that are registered and have business license and are governed by our state. My concern is about the backyard breeders that we have. I've had multiple dogs. I've had a blue heeler, a German shepherd, a short-haired pointer, and and a bunch of Frenchies. But my concern is always about the backyard breeders, and so this bill doesn't address that. And so can you touch on your stance on backyard breeders?
Representative Norris.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Herr, and Representative Chaw for the question. Obviously, anything that is a threat to animal welfare as well as consumer protection is something that I think we need to find ways to crack down on and prevent. I'm not the subject matter expert in this area. I might turn it over to Mr. Zellhofer for a little bit more on what can be done in that particular area, but certainly I think you've put your finger on an important issue and one that I think it would behoove the legislature to continue to examine and look for additional policy solutions for.
Mr. Zellhofer, any additional comments?
Thank you, Chair Herr. Thank you, Representative Shaw. I thank you for your point that you've raised. The issue that we were talking about today is of puppy mills, and the compromise that has been included in the language is data transparency. So the issue is we don't know where these dogs are coming from right now. When people go to buy these dogs off of impulse, they don't know the history of the breeding conditions or anything that comes from. So to address your point that you raised, that would be disclosed and a person would know where the dog is coming from, including a backyard breeder.
Any follow-up, Representative Chow?
Yes. You know, I just want to make a statement that I've purchased many German Shepherd with hip dysplasia. It's a common thing with German Shepherd with backyard breeders. You know, I don't support a bill that just targets just the pet stores. I like to see some, I guess, to be inclusive also backyard breeders, because those are my concern, because you look at the Frenchies that are being bred right now, most of them just need C-sections to get their babies out, right? And we're having all these hybrid animals that people are crossbreeding that, you know, they're just, it's a hodgepodge of, you know, dogs, right? And we don't know what those genetics are doing, where they're coming from. And, you know, I think we need more regulations about that. But that's just my comment. And thanks, Representative Norris, for bringing this forward. Thank you.
Representative Dotson.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Norris. Question I've got is, are there still any existing bad players still in existence right now that you're dealing with? Are there still bad players out there? Because it appears that this is going after just three existing businesses that are out there right now. Is that correct?
Representative Norris.
Chair Herr, Representative Dotseth, I think part of the goal of this bill is to find out. You know, I take these business owners at their word that they are sourcing from reputable breeders, but I think what this bill accomplishes is allows us to verify that. You know, the old Ronald Reagan line, trust but verify. I think Mr. Zellhofer has some data that might give us an indication of what we're seeing kind of collectively within the industry, but this bill is going to allow us to know for sure.
Mr. Zellhofer.
Thank you, Chair Herr. Thank you, Representative Dotseth, for the question. I think as Representative Norris discussed, transparency is the greatest thing here. Yes, we can look at the data from just 2021 until now. These are the breeders that are selling to pet stores here in Minnesota. We see a lot of violations that are happening. Dogs with inadequate access to water, dogs that are in overheated facilities that don't have access to be cooled down, multiple violations of vet care, multiple violations of dogs with loose teeth. The USDA classifies that as dogs with discomfort. Dogs with fecal matter breed up, the list goes on and on and on. And I'm happy to share these documents with you if need be.
Any follow-up, Representative Dotseth?
Thank you, Chair. One final comment. Mr. Swanson, you may not know this. Actually, this weekend, I just spent the weekend with one of your dogs that actually came from your facility, my granddaughters, actually were there for the weekend. And I have to say they've had that dog for 5 years, and that's been a lovely dog. And there are some good facilities out there. So I guess we want to be careful how we go about approaching this. And I want to make sure we preserve and protect businesses that are already doing reputable businesses out there. Thank you.
Good.
Yes, Representative Norris.
Chair, Representative Dotseth, to your point, this bill does exactly that. If you're a good pet store, you're working with responsible breeders, nothing is going to change about your business operations under this bill.
Our next member is Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For those of you who come to Blaine for the National Sports Center, you can find Four Paws and a Tail at the Northtown Mall, and you'll see a lot of children loving every second of it. The mall's not doing particularly well, actually, but it is definitely the most popular store in the mall. So I find it kind of strange that we would be going after them, as I think Representative Norris and I both want to see Blaine and Northtown be successful. Buying a pet through these sources isn't inherently a bad thing. I bought a corgi out of the back of a rusty Suburban, and it was a wonderful dog, and he is still with us to this day and very healthy. I also bought a little adorable, what I thought was a mini Australian Shepherd, from a backyard breeder who turned out not to be one. So there are these unregulated sources where transparency could help. If this bill was just about transparency, which is a question I have, is The transparency pieces in this bill for Mr. Swenson, the owner of the pet store, are you opposed to the transparency pieces of this bill? Because if you ban any opening of a cat or dog sales shop, you really destroy any value of the business, because a lot of people sell their businesses when they want to move on. And, you know, imagine that happening to your most valuable asset in your portfolio. So my question would be for Mr. Swenson, the transparency pieces that are in this bill, do you have any concern about those?
Mr. Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To answer that question, we are currently already transparent with releasing the reader information at the time of purchase. They get all of the information that's required that's already in the Consumer Rights Protection Bill. So the added to this information, it's just additional documentation paperwork. So, I mean, I am opposed to it. One of the things, this was not a compromise. I was not invited to attend the meetings and visit with them to help write this bill, to be able to meet the needs of the consumers and also to meet the animal rights. So.
Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd encourage the author of the bill, both for the good of Northtown Mall and Blaine, but also for the good of this individual's business, to focus on the transparency pieces. For the people who really want this, maybe there's more transparency we can do. It sounds like more paperwork, but if they're good operators, as the author of the bill has implied, I don't know why we would jeopardize their livelihoods in the future by banning this. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the bill, Representative Norris. My question is quite different from what we've been talking about. I'm a dedicated rescue dog and cat mom, so I've adopted many, many animals. And so you specify that a pet shop may provide space for adoption, but not receive a fee for providing space. My questions, one of them is, is it common at this point for shops to charge a fee for a rescue? And secondly, could you just talk about the rationale for that? I'm not a for or against it. I'm just curious. Thank you.
Mr. Zellhofer.
Thank you, Chair Herr. Thank you, Representative. As you can see in the packet that was provided today, there is testimony from Angels Pet World, in Wisconsin, that went from selling dogs from puppy mills and switched over to selling a humane pet store model, where they work with rescues and they allow rescues and 501c3 nonprofit organizations to come in and adopt dogs out there. As you can see in the pack that was included, I'm quoting Angel from Angel's Pet World that says that she saw our customer base grew about 70% by adopting that model of working with nonprofits and having people come in and adopt dogs from them.
Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But I'm curious about the issue of whether or not they are charging fees and why they would or wouldn't. I'm not questioning the value and the greatness of being able to have accessible rescue animals. Thank you.
Mr. Zellhofer.
Thank you, Chair Herr. Thank you, Representative. There is no fee allowed involved in that.
Representative Norris.
Chair Herr, Representative Ryer, I can maybe add a little bit more color to why that's in there. The goal is to prevent a situation where you're basically creating a sham organization that would be a front that would basically then allow for the kind of backdoor around the provisions in this bill.
All right, our next up is Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to echo the comments of Rep. Chaw and West. I think that if we're going to be creating legislation that addresses the issues that are addressed in the bill, I don't think it makes sense to target one specific business model and to single that business model out. And we talk a lot in this place about picking winners and losers, and that's kind of the definition of it, at least from my perspective, as we're discussing this bill today. And I am wanting to know if Rep. Norris, if there is a specific reason that some stakeholders, it sounds like, might have been left out of the discussion as to what this bill should and shouldn't do, because there's clearly some things here that do have bipartisan support, and that I think more of us could come around and to help get across the line. But when we hear from Mr. Swanson about the concerns that he has, and I'm very empathetic in that I'm trying to build a business that I hope that I can, pass on or sell one day and have some value there, and this bill eliminates that opportunity. So I'll just reiterate the question, Rep. Norris, is there a reason that those folks I'm hearing today were left out of that discussion? It's good to have stakeholders. What was the reasoning for that? Or maybe there's an...
Representative Norris.
Chair Herr, Representative Heitzman, I'd push back on the notion that they were left out, and I would also assert that they're moving the goalpost on you.
Representative Heitzman.
Madam Chair. That's fine, Representative Norris, to push back, but that's their testimony today. And I think that it's important that's there for the record, that they certainly don't feel like they were included. So that's up to you as the bill author to try to create that opportunity for folks to be in that room and participate. And it doesn't sound like they felt that way. I'll just end, Madam Chair, by pointing out that we've heard, I think, from a number of testifiers that transparency is something that we're all working towards, and it sounds like the business owners that are being impacted by this are already working towards that and recognize that and could find agreement around that issue. I believe that we'd be better off listening today and trying to find those opportunities where there is agreement as opposed to including elements in this bill that clearly are controversial. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. Up next is Representative Norris. Did you have any comments on that before I go to the next member? Okay. Representative Crenshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the business owner, what is the what currently exists for your reporting and regulation of your industry now? Madam Chair.
Well, there are already. Oh, sorry.
Mr. Swanson.
Madam Chair, for the response to the question, there is already a consumer rights protection law that's enforced by the state of Minnesota, and it discloses everything about the breeder at the time of sale. There's protections there. There's protections if the puppy becomes ill. There's protections in that way where we refund up to the price of the puppy to help them with the vet bills. I don't have it in front of me of exactly what it is, but it is transparent of where we disclose and where the breeders are coming from, where the puppies are coming from.
Representative Crenshaw.
Madam Chair, so thank you for that. So there's already a regulatory system in place, and I'm just going to back my comments up, make these more comments rather than questions. We're the Commerce Committee. Our job is to set up the rules of commerce, and it doesn't matter what the product is. And that's what we have to do. There's a regulatory enforcement that's another arm that we don't control. And more I'm seeing where we're carving things out, and I just think that's bad policy for this committee. I mean, a couple of issues that I heard was this wouldn't close anybody down, but yet we're grandfathering, which tells me we're carving out. So we are setting up rules that would be inconsistent with how other commerce would happen in this space. And I just think that's a bad policy for the Commerce Committee. And I'll just go to the issue itself now with pets. I was fortunate enough to do a lot with professional hunting and training. And I can tell you this, members, the biggest problem is the owners. The owners that mistreat their pets and the way those pets are handled. And this cannot get to that. And frankly, I have seen more pets that have been absolutely atrociously mistreated because, frankly, the lack of responsibility with the pet owners. So with that, I think that we're going to miss the mark on this. I think that we're missing the mark. Inconsistency as a committee that continues to carve out and just try to do things in a whimsical fashion when we really can't get to the issue. So with that, I would be opposed to this bill as it stands.
And our last member question goes to Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Norris, for your bill. I'm an author on the bill. I appreciate the work that you are doing here. Mr. Zellhofer, appreciate your advocacy. My first question, just quickly, and then I have a follow-up, is why is the effective date so far out into the future at August 2026?
Representative Norris or Mr. Zellhofer?
Thank you, Chair Herr, and thank you, Representative Finke, for that. We have had some conversations with Michael Swanson on this. The effective date is out in the future, and this would essentially make it so that no new businesses could start in this process. Part of the bill is required that any businesses that is in operation for a year is going to be included in the grandfather clause that is in section 3.30 of the bill. So this bill would not ban anything, and that allows that time period. So this wouldn't negatively impact any business that is currently in operation, such as Mr. Swanson's Four Paws and a Tail.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Zellhofer, for your answer. I do want to point out that it was also just testified that Mr. Swanson was a participant in the conversations around this bill. I'm not sure which way we want to go, but those are conflicting pieces of testimony, and I think that's important for us to note. I will add my own personal disappointment. I actually agree with Representative Kreisha. We should not be carving out exemptions. We should just be banning this practice. Selling puppies, selling animals that have been tortured and abused for profit is wrong. The reason there are only three of these businesses left in Minnesota is because Minnesotans don't want businesses that sell abused and tortured animals for profit. That's why there are only three left. We should not be protecting them because they exist. We should be passing laws that we believe are right for the state of Minnesota, and it is hard. And I don't say that because I'm trying to put people out of business. I say that because we as a state recognize what we're trying to do, and we pass laws, and we think that those laws are good or not good. We shouldn't grandfather people. I agree. I think that we heard the testifiers say and was teed up pretty conveniently to say the transparency piece of this bill is something we can live with. And then we heard the testifier say, no, I don't support the transparency. Even the transparency part is being opposed by the businesses that do this because the transparency kills the business, right? If you are buying puppy-milled puppies out of the back of a car, you are supporting the idea that unregulated dog breeding should continue in the state of Minnesota. And we're trying to say we don't, that's actually not what we want. St. Paul already has this, as well as Eden Prairie. Roseville, two of the cities in my district, have already banned this practice. This is a bipartisan bill. We want to try to figure out a future for animal welfare in Minnesota that doesn't include profiting on abused and tortured animals. The evidence against this is mountainous. I mean, we have moved so far since the 90s when I bought my dog at a pet store in Maple Grove to now. We have just seen decades of evidence that these operations shouldn't continue. I agree with Representative Cha. We need to continue to go backwards to solve this problem, but that doesn't mean we allow something that we don't want practicing in Minnesota to practice. So I support the bill. I wish the bill went further. I understand the compromise, and I really appreciate Representative Norris's willingness to work with the stakeholders. Despite what has been said here, I know that you have worked very hard to make this bill work, to not punish existing businesses, and to make sure that we move forward in the vision that we want as a state that cares about the welfare of all living creatures, like I do so deeply. So thank you very much. I support the bill. Let's come back next year and let's take care of the background problems that have created this. Thank you.
Thank you, members, for the discussion. Before I turn this over to Representative Norris for any final comments, I will just add quickly that I'm not somebody who grew up with pets. I did not ever think that I would love an animal so much until I got my own pet, which was a rescue. And she died very recently. A car hit her at the farm. And around that same time, my sister-in-law, my brother, actually bought a dog from Mr. Swanson's store, which at the time I did not know. But that little dog was the sweetest thing ever. but she was always very, like, we just thought she was super obedient, and she had been such a well-taught dog. But within a month, she became very sick, had kidney issues. She ended up dying within the month of them receiving, buying that dog. I think they paid a couple $1,000 for her. And that was really disappointing because in my mind, I didn't even think, like, oh, where did this dog come from, right? But I also understand that your business actually tried really hard to make that situation right by offering them, you know, to come back in and look at another animal because they did spend a lot of money on that. And so I really do appreciate that. I don't think that there's anybody here that is intentional about being bad actors, and I really appreciate the conversation today by our members, that it was respectful and it was thoughtful. Any time that we do have conversations around animals, it does get contentious or people have very strong opinions. And so I just wanted to say one thank you to our members for having a respectful conversation and questions about this. This is a really tough topic, and I see both arguments on both sides. The importance of us making sure that animals are not bred in conditions that are harmful, that lead to death within somebody. My father, who, you know, love that little dog that my brother bought. He cried, and he only had the dog for a month. And I just thought, you know, what it means to people to take care of an animal and then to just have it not be with them. And so I think that this is an issue that we should address. I want to thank Representative Norris because I don't know as much as I would like to about this bill, but I do know that this bill came from a place where it was much broader before, and through the years it's been narrowed. And I hope that all of us are around long enough so that if then we broaden it because of what we heard today, that we don't say it's too broad again, and that to ask it to be narrow because it will just constantly broaden and narrow and never get to an end point. And so I look forward to future conversations about this, and thank you for the work that you've put into this. And I hope that there is a resolution and we are able to find something that works for all the things that have been brought up today. And so Representative Norris, any final comments before we close out the bill?
Thank you, Chair Herr, for those comments. Thank you, committee, for the discussion. One thing that's important to emphasize is that, you know, when a bill doesn't look like stakeholders want it to, it doesn't mean that those stakeholders weren't heard. Our responsibility as legislators, your responsibility as the Commerce Committee, is to listen to all the various stakeholders, and then determine what is the responsible policy for the state of Minnesota. And sometimes that might look more like one side wants than the other side wants, but the process involves listening to all the different sides and then determining what is the most responsible policy for our state. I believe this bill strikes that balance. It allows responsible operators to continue to operate, but acknowledges that there are broad concerns about animal welfare and consumer protection regarding this industry. And so it, in exchange, asks those operators who are going to continue to operate to offer greater transparency to the public so that we can be confident that the animals involved in this commerce are being treated well and humanely, and that the consumers who are involved in this commerce are being protected as well. So I appreciate all the different stakeholders on this issue coming to me and sharing their perspectives, and I offer this bill to you as a compromise that strikes the right balance to protect animals, protect the public, and protect people's ability to make a livelihood.
Thank you, Representative Norris, and the bill is laid over. And so tomorrow, members, Representative O'Driscoll, Co-Chair O'Driscoll, will have the gavel. Seeing that there's no further business in front of this committee is adjourned.